Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. William H. Calvin is our guest, and again, I can say neurophysiologist. You've spent about 35 years looking at physiology.
Right.
You are a neurophysiologist,
yes.
And here you are talking about the weather.
Well, yes, but you see, I was a more general physiologist before I became a neurophysiologist, and one of the things you study are things like the kidney with its salt circulation and all that. And when I saw what the oceanographers were doing, I immediately understood. I mean, this is just like the kidney. I mean, it has currents just like this. As I say, it's a much simpler version of what we deal with in biology. And in biology, we're constantly dealing with nonlinear systems. The nerve impulse, the muscle contraction, all are nonlinear systems that we've been looking at with great care for 30 or 40 years.
Just for the general listener's appreciation, would you just do the real quick course on the difference between a linear and a nonlinear system? Because that's still a relatively new idea to folks.
A linear system is a dimmer switch that you gradually creep up and the brightness gradually changes. A nonlinear system is a ordinary switch that you push it and nothing happens, and you push it a little more, and then finally it clicks, and you know, that's a nonlinear system.
And that is a closer analog to our bodies.
Some parts of our bodies. There's plenty of analog and digital stuff in the bodies, as it were. That is to say, the digital stuff is nonlinear par excellence.
Well, this is quite relevant to what you're talking about with the weather on two fronts, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? One, that it looks a lot alike.
Mm-hmm.
Bill has introduced me and some other very distinguished people to the idea of scalability. If you
mm-hmm.
can look at something little and look at something big, you might learn mm-hmm. each from the other. And the other part of that is that you're deeply concerned, interested in how we evolved, how our mm-hmm. brains got four times bigger in a relatively short period
yes,
of time.
Yes, well, that's why I learned about all this abrupt stuff in the weather, because it was pretty obvious even 15 years ago that in human evolution, we've shared a common ancestor with the chimp and the bonobo about 5 million years ago. And that very soon thereafter, in the hominid branch of this evolutionary tree, upright posture evolved. But brain size didn't change very much until about 2.5 million years ago, when it headed uphill and increased 3 or 4 times. Now, that happened 2.5 million years ago. And 2.5 million years ago is also when, for example, the chimpanzee and the bonobo split occurred in that tree. It's the same time that the gibbon and the Siamang, other ape species, also split. And you sort of have to ask what happened, about then. Well, the Ice Age just started 2.5 million years ago, probably secondary to the North and South America coming together in Panama and blocking the path for the ocean currents exchanging between the Atlantic and the Pacific and the tropics. And once those currents were blocked by the sort of dam in Panama, the ocean currents underwent some major detours. And that's probably the instability that actually started the climate being this ice age back and forth secondary to that. So I've always wondered what on earth the ice ages had to do, with brain enlargement. Why does the brain enlargement only occur once you get to the ice ages? And since most of the action for this has been in Africa, and because Africa hasn't had very much ice, I mean, it's always been an intriguing puzzle as to what on earth ice ages had to do.
Literally on earth.
and I'm still not sure I understand the answer to that question, but I can tell you that what I think does it is not ice in Africa, it's abrupt climate changes in Africa. Because they too, even the tropical areas that are, near sea level, are in effect jacked up a few thousand feet by one of these mm-hmm. abrupt coolings.
In addition to this being a very interesting story, this is also the self-interesting part of this. Weather affects us as a species.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't just this interesting thing that might happen if Europe got hungry. It's more than just the immediacy of the political.
Mm-hmm.
There are big implications for us as a species,
As a species, they're greatly exaggerated now with our reliance on agriculture. I mean, we have such a much larger population than a hunter-gatherer population. I mean, when abrupt climate changes occurred, hunter-gatherers could move. I mean, you can't move London, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the mm-hmm. nature of civilization is such that not only can we not move these major areas very quickly, but when an abrupt climate change happens, you get enormous crop failures at a time, and they're very disorganizing. In most catastrophes, like earthquakes and hurricanes and so forth, first of all, they're over in a day or two, and only part of the country is affected, and the rest of the country can bail them out. In something like this, it's not over in a day, and the rest of the country is affected and is disorganized and struggling itself, and you basically don't get very much help. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so catastrophic, is that so many places are affected at once, and the reliance that we have upon agriculture. I mean, in the United States, about 1.4% of the population raises the food for all the rest of us. And that's an enormous sort of leverage issue, if mm-hmm. you like, that also makes us very vulnerable, because anything that disrupts the system of both growing and transporting, you know, the food means the people in the city starve.
You talk about the pressure of climate being a key, or at least potentially key, to the development of the human mind,
mm-hmm.
Which sounds like good news. My guess is that there were some individuals, pre-human, who did not do well under those circumstances.
Yes.
That this stressing is at best a mixed blessing. I mean, we've realized the benefits of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of
survived.
But my guess is a lot of people, individuals, came out on the short end of that.
Yep. Well, normally we think of evolution as sort of being like standard economic reasoning. That is to say that, you know, lean, mean machines do better. I mean, you've got to strip out the fat, all this sort of thing. And what that tends to mean in evolution is that abilities that were useful in some former, earlier climate, could be lost. Now, if you have a jack of all trades, first of all, it's an expensive brain. I mean, brains take a lot of blood flow. It's economic. It's in the body's economy. It's an expensive organ to support. And if you had lean, mean machine tendencies, they might be fine in the present climate. But if the climate were to change abruptly, the lean, mean machines would do very poorly, and the jack of all trades would have what it takes to sort of rediscover an ancestor's way of making a living. I mean, for example, if the hunting, dries up with one of these climate changes, they would have the wherewithal to reinvent the digging sticks and so forth it would take to get the roots out of the ground to survive the transition. So it's sort of the jack of all trades aspect, which I find attractive in this, that this back and forth flips in climate that are so sudden that biological adaptations really can't track them, because they happen within one generation, does put a premium upon jack of all trades abilities.
That sounds optimistic, and part of what you're saying doesn't sound optimistic. I think, and it sounds sort of species optimistic, individual, I guess, threatening. Is that a fair description?
Well, I mean, certainly if one of these happened again, I mean, some people might say, well, there's really a silver lining to this. We might wind up a little bit more intelligent, as a species after another one of these, just the way it happened in the past. I really don't believe this for a minute. I mean, I believe that that's the way it happened in the past, but I don't believe that there's a silver lining for the present. And that is because, first of all, since the invention of agriculture, natural selection has been pretty minimal anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can now have half the population nearsighted in a way that must have been terribly disadvantageous
mm-hmm.
earlier. And secondly, there's a tendency in evolution you can have natural selection without actually having changes in the species that are very fast. I mean, it's sort of like an engine and the wheels being connected by a clutch. We're in a situation now where the clutch slips badly, where despite natural selection occurring, it doesn't make very many changes. And that's basically because there's not a lot of inbreeding. I mean, they say you don't have regional populations on islands whose mate selection is more or less restricted to people whose parents and grandparents, survived the same things as they did. Because of the mixture that we've had ever since, camel caravans and boats and so forth were invented, That by itself more or less guarantees that another one of these abrupt coolings is not going to jack us up another 2% in IQ or something.
William Calvin is our guest, a neurophysiologist who has a deep interest in the weather. We're going to be back for a couple more minutes with Dr. Calvin. We are at the Commerce Club in Atlanta with guests. Bill Russell is here, and I am Paula Gordon. Stay tuned.